What's up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of the Celtics Talk Podcast here on the NBC Sports Boston Podcast Network. Coming up on today's show, I'm looking for a little positivity because I know Celtics fans are down. So I reached out to an old friend, Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. He's been trying to tell people, hang in there. We'll still see if he's alone on that island, trying to hold out hope that the Celtics can turn this around. And then later, longtime listeners will love this. Yes, I got to go one-on-one with the Time Lord, Robert Williams, talking about what it's like, what's he thinking when he's up in the air for those dunks, and does he know how absurd some of the moves he's making is? We'll talk about that, his favorite movies, his childhood, and jumping around on trampolines. That's all coming up on the Celtics Talk Podcast. But first, here's Tommy Heinsohn screaming. All right, Chad Finn, I am sorry to bring you in at the lowest of low points. Every time we say we have a rock bottom podcast, I don't think we can hit another rock bottom, but the Celtics are coming off an 0-3 road trip. You have been one of the few beacons of positivity, and that's why I felt like I needed to infuse you into this podcast. Where are you at with this Celtics? Are you still clinging to hope?
Oh no, I'm swimming off that island and trying to get to dry land, man.
Oh no.
No, I've written a few positive things before the various rock bottoms that they've had here the last few days. But you keep waiting for it to get better, and it just hasn't. It goes to this next level of I can't believe that just happened, you know. And, you know, as we talked, they've got four games before the All-Star break. I've never seen a team more desperately in need of that break. And it almost makes me think one of these games, Brad should just play Taco 35 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Carson Edwards out there and let him jack 40 shots like he wants to and just give these guys a breather. You can't afford to do that because of what their record is, and he would probably never do that anyway. But this is really it's really pretty shocking to see this happen with a team that basically with some tweaks to the roster, but basically is the team that got to the East Finals last year. They didn't have Gordon Hayward after the first game of the first round until they played the Heat in the East Finals. So just really bizarre to see. I know it's a really strange year and a lot of weird things are happening around the league, but nobody really expected this from this team.
Yeah, and I guess the hard part for me is usually when a team goes into a funk, you say, oh, there's one definitive thing that's happening. Okay, you know, we can put some of it on not having Marcus Smart. That's explained some of your defensive slippage. But to routinely just, you know, either give away big leads or show up with no energy on a night where you, like, it's like you said, it's almost must-win territory at this point. How do you start to fix this? Like if you were Danny Ainge, if you're Brad Stevens, what's the first thing that you do? I'm not a big make a panic move. I might be ready to make a panic move.
Yeah. The first thing I do probably is turn off sports radio because you're going to get a lot of bad suggestions that you don't want to actually do. And the fans are frustrated and mm-hmm. maybe even panicked, and that's understandable because it is so many different things. I think you just need a night to go right. You need the shots to be falling for Jason Tatum and Kemba Walker on the same night. You need a Jaylen Brown to fill up the box score and make the right pass in the right situation. All those things that are reasonable to expect, but really haven't happened. And you can see it with the star players on this team. I know there's a lot of noise about playing selfishly, and it's frustrating when Tatum will hold the ball for 2.5 seconds and then slide step and take a 23 footer when you're hoping for a better shot in a situation. But we've got a lot of evidence that these guys care. Mm-hmm. We've seen it with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown again and again. And I think where their issues kind of mount is when these guys are trying to take it all on themselves and it devolves into one-on-one play because they think, well, I'm the all-star. I'm the best option here. I've made the shot a million times in my career. I'm going to knock it down now. And then, you know, when it doesn't fall, it starts snowballing with the other guys. And when your stars aren't making shots and your role players aren't coming through, that's when things really, really get rolling in a bad way.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. Like, and I've been as critical of those guys, if only because if you're going to be an all-star, there is a pressure that comes with it. And I just think they're finding that balance. We heard Danny on the radio today with Touch and Rich sort of say, they've always had that shield. You always had Kyrie or Gordon or someone else out there, but now they're the focal points. But the flip side of that is that's what they wanted. You know, that part of becoming all-stars, being all NBA, is that you have to accept that pressure. You know, I do think there are times where they're trying to do too much, but I think it's also fair to say, if they're looking out there and they're like, all right, we're out here with Jeff Teague, Tristan Thompson, and like, I'm like the biggest Aaron Nesmith fan in the world. And I think needs to play, but you know, that's your crunch time lineup at one point. And I'm thinking, man, like I can understand why they're probably like, I'm going to do this. So it's funny how I feel like if they just get one win, could snowball a little bit. Like, it's not going to fix everything. And there's way too many issues to say, but it's so funny how they're just so desperate to get that one victory that can sort of alleviate the pressure, take a little bit of the overthinking everything off of it. And maybe it would start to snowball, but I do need a little bit more from the Jays. And again, it's hard for me. And I'm as guilty of this as anyone. I'm saying, you know, how come they don't take it personally? Like, how do you go through this stretch and not come out and just will your team to a victory? But maybe it's more complicated than that. And you know, I relent that, you know, there's plenty of blame pie to go around. So I do want us to go, that's the next kind of way I want to approach this. If you had to take your blame pie, who gets the biggest slice? Is there a lot? I mean, I feel like there's a lot of slices on there, but who's getting the bulk of that blame pie for you?
Yeah, I think we're probably slicing it up maybe seven or eight different ways and pretty equally. Kemba is a frustration because he's still playing like he's the guy, still approaching the game like he was. He's the same guy as he was in the first half last year, which is an all-star, easy all-star pick. Guy who came in here and you could call him the alpha. I think he was still regarded as the best player and the guy obviously with the most individual accomplishment. And so Tatum and Brown fell in line a little bit behind him. He's not that guy anymore. No. And one of the things that really needs to happen with him is he needs to recognize that Jaylen Brown's ascent has been pretty linear for an NBA player. He just keeps getting better and better. You know, it's not always exactly linear, but he keeps improving and improving. And he became the number two guy for sure, maybe even the co-number one while Walker was out. And Tatum's Tatum. He has a chance to be and is one of the better scorers in the league and needs the ball. And I think there have been a lot of adjustments for Kemba that are a lot to ask and really difficult, but he needs to make them. He needs to figure out what he is as a player while dealing with this knee injury. He needs to recognize that he is option number three and he can't try to shoot his way out of things like he's been trying to do. And he needs to be a little more of a playmaker. You know, we talk about them not sharing the ball. I don't think it's so much selfishness as this just isn't a great passing team. And we talk about missing Marcus Smart's intensity, and God bless him for getting a technical on the bench the other night. But
it's amazing.
And they do miss that dearly. Maybe they get that stop and that 24-point loss to the Pelicans is a win. You kind of forget that they blew that big lead. But they really miss him as a playmaker even more because everybody dwells on the bad shots that he takes, but he makes really smart decisions with the basketball. It's the same way they miss Gordon Hayward this year. You know, I don't fault Danny for not finding a replacement for him because it's really hard to find a good wing. And Hayward, even in the role he didn't like, played a really unselfish, smart brand of basketball. Maybe Langford would have been the guy in that role if he could get on the court, but they're really lacking in that area. And then Danny, you know, still slicing up that blame pie, brought in probably the wrong veterans. Teague had a nice game the other night, but he's been really a disaster for the most part since the first game of the season. And Tristan Thompson's hit or miss. He kind of, I hate to say this, he kind of reminds me of Perk after the knee injury, where the explosiveness just isn't quite there. I know Celtics fans were bummed to see Perk go, and I think the 10-year anniversary of that was this week, but he just wasn't the same player anymore. And it's clear Thompson's not the same player he was with the Cavaliers, even though he's been a little bit better lately. So there's a lot to divide up there. And of course, it's probably a segue for you here, but you know, Brad's getting a lot of the brunt of it too.
Yeah. So a lot to unpack. I want to go back to Kemba because, you know, even when we're talking about this, I think I tend to almost overlook him was doing an interview, a radio interview with ESPN yesterday, and we went like 7 minutes, and they were like, "Oh, we should talk about Kemba." I was like, "Oh yeah, you know, Kemba." It's like, I don't know if he has to necessarily, can he embrace changing his game? You know, all he's known is being high usage, running pick and rolls. You know, now he's got to become a catch and shoot guy. Probably he does have to improve his playmaking. You know, what's crazy is that when he signed here, I said, wow, he was the perfect guy because he was willing to be that alpha. He kind of gave the team what it lost in Kyrie, but with the added benefit of being the perfect personality to nurture the Jays, but probably quicker than anyone expected, those guys' rise has now turned him into like trying to have to morph him. And unlike, you know, Jalen and Jason going up, it's like Kemba almost has to come back down. And I don't know if he can do that. I don't know if there's a perfect path, but I do think it just comes down to Kemba embracing it. And like the shot making will come. I feel like, you know, the knee might always be a little bit limiting. He might not be the same player, but he can find spots. To score 20 points per game in the playoffs when he had a bum wheel is almost absurd. But can he embrace the playmaking side of it? Do you think that Brad Stevens can get through to him in terms of like how he has to change to a more deferential player?
Yeah, I think he can. It's just, he's at this weird career crossroads, and I don't know if he recognizes it or if he's just struggling with figuring out which direction to go or how to approach that. But he's been a high volume scorer for his career on mediocre teams. Someone who's playing style has worked out for him really well as a high quality, very well paid NBA player. And he's trying to sort out whether he's still that guy, whether he's still going to have that explosiveness on a given night. And I think his approach to his struggles is, I'm going to shoot my way out of this. I've missed my first three, next one's going in, and it's going to be all good. And then suddenly you look up and he's 4 for 12 in the third quarter or something like that. And we've still seen situations where that's happened and then he's gotten hot in the fourth. But, you know, last year, the pecking order was such that Kemba taking those shots with a healthy knee in the first half of the season, that made all sense in the world. Now it really doesn't so much. I don't think you can ask him to become a true number one Chris Paul type of point guard. You know, even Paul's a scorer, but he's the guy who runs the offense, for an example, because that's just not who he's ever been. He's a guy who averages 4 assists a game. But he can be, he's a good passer. He can get in he's good at getting in the paint and leaving that bounce pass for a guy like Tice or Time Lord. But to turn him into a conventional one, that's just not going to happen at this stage of his career. He needs to figure out, and he's trying to do it through trial and error right now, but he needs to figure out how he's going to maximize his own abilities with what he has right now, while also getting the best of his teammates. And I think Kemba, you know, Kemba, he's a good guy, really cares. I think that's the same for Jason and Jalen, even though they're a little bit laconic sometimes publicly. And I do think it'll work out. It's just, you didn't expect the bumps in the road to be as bumpy as they are right now.
All right. And while you alluded to it, Brad, a lot of social media general managers want to change at the coaching position. I sort of slapped my head. Not only did we forget, you know, 5 of the past 7 years. I understand, you know, if you want to make a knock on Brad, it's certainly that when he's had what we would consider elite talent, probably the most talented rosters, he hasn't quite met expectations. Now, those expectations are out of whack because he's been so good at getting underachieved or under-talented teams to overachieve. And that sort of set the bar pretty high for him. Where do you fall? Like, I always, it's so hard for me. I can criticize a GM. I play NBA 2K. I can like modify my roster. Far be it from me to tell Brad Stevens how to draw up the X's and O's. That's where I struggle to necessarily critique what he's doing. But I will say this, starting Jeff Teague, the reliance on the two big lineup, some of the roster rotation decisions in general, Semi Ojeleye being out there for long stretches, Grant Williams sort of disappearing and then coming back, and maybe most importantly, the lack of Time Lord minutes.
Yeah.
It's fair to criticize. It's like Brad gets a slice here, but how big is, you know, how much is it fair for the obvious, the cost for his job is preposterous. He's 6 months from signing a contract extension. How can Brad be better?
Yeah, it's all those things that you cited for sure. He tends to favor veterans, which is kind of surprising for a guy who came from the college game and recognizes the value that a young player can provide. Mm-hmm. It's not just veterans; it's guys who are low upside veterans like Shemmy. Shemmy's gotten better this year. He's shooting the ball better than he ever has from long range, but he's still eighth man, ninth man on a good team. Ideally, they would have spent the first part of the season, and I think maybe they attempted to do it this way, finding out what they had, mm-hmm. finding out how many minutes Time Lord could give them down the stretch, late in the season, in the playoffs. And, Brad did acknowledge that this week, that they want to make sure his hip is healthy for the end of the year. That's why they're kind of watching his minutes now. I want to see Aaron Nesmith, even though he was lost, yes. Put him out there and get him some reps. Get him those minutes on the court where he's going to start understanding the pace of the game and getting in the flow of it. And it's not going to seem so fast to him anymore every time he goes out for his 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, at the end of the fourth quarter. And he's done that a little bit lately, but you would have liked to have seen that sooner. The problem is they hadn't had the success that they were kind of expecting to have. And so you kind of had to play for the win every night just to kind of get out of this rut. And it got in the way, I think, a little bit of the trying to develop these younger guys and use them in the right way. That's going to maximize what they are at the end of the year. We were talking about whether I'm still kind of on that island and believing in this team. I honestly, jokes aside, I am. I think ideally if Danny brings in a wing, whether it's Harrison Barnes or, I had Grandy talking with you about Aaron Gordon as his mm-hmm. ideal guy, or, we've all heard the various names. If he brings that in and they can stay healthy where Marcus Smart's not dealing with an injury late in the season, and Kemba's knee doesn't become a chronic issue, and he is, even if he's declined a little bit from what he was last year, still a very valuable player. I think this team's capable of being a real contender in the East, but they've got a lot to sort out, and it's on Brad to sort of figure that out. And he's a terrific coach. People lose sight of the fact that this team, for the most part, has overachieved or exceeded early preseason expectations almost every year since he got here. Not the year Hayward broke his leg in the first quarter of the first game of the season. Not when Kyrie checked out and decided that Nike ad was not going to come true. He's had issues there. But for the most part, this team is better, including last year, than what their expectations were supposed to be. And he's got his issues. He has these trends. The third quarter thing isn't a real thing, but blowing leads is a real thing.
Yes.
And sometimes the ISO ball feels like it falls on Brad a little bit. But in the big picture, I want this guy coaching the Celtics. I want Danny Ainge running the Celtics. And with a transaction or two and decent health, I still think this is a really good team, contrary to what we've seen these last couple of weeks when they've gone 7-14.
Yeah, and look, we do this. And sometimes I say, well, we overreact to stretches. Well, I mean, this is over a month now where it's been pretty bad. Not at least not consecutive wins. So I get that part of it. All that being said, I think you said it well. Like, here's all the things that have to go perfectly for them to really be back in that title conversation. It involves Kemba get turning the corner, the Jays sort of maturation to being those leadership, getting another guy. But I feel the same way. I was sitting there during the first half of that Pelicans game. And I like literally that when I started typing was maybe the Boston Celtics really are just one healthy Marcus Smart and one traded player exception away from being a legitimate contender. Now, thank God I didn't hit publish because we saw what happened from there and we saw what happened on this road trip. But I do think there are, it's not as, as Brad would say, things are never as bad as they seem. They're never as good as they seem. They're always, somewhere in between. So I do try to stay somewhat positive. One concerning thing for me here, this week we heard Wick Grosbeck come on the radio, owner of the Celtics, and say,
money doesn't drive our show around here. It's trying to win, but we have to also run. We are under a cap situation, and we're hard capped at the moment. Like, literally can't spend more than X amount, which is why that TPE is probably going to be more useful. Maybe we can use part of it within the hard cap at the trade deadline, and if it's available to us and we want to do it, we'll do it. But if the right deal is there, but otherwise, it's something we'll probably look more to the offseason for.
Danny Ainge has admitted at times that this might open the pool of available players a little bit more, but I just feel like with what the way the Gordon Hayward situation played out, it feels like they almost have to use this thing, or at least a decent chunk of it. Who do you like? And are you confident that Danny will make a move, especially based on today? It sounded in his interview with Touch for Rich, he sort of seemed to push back on the idea of waiting and then at least using a fair chunk of it to add talent.
Yeah, I think it may be more likely that he brings in a couple of guys that we're not even thinking about, and that they're not the the names that have been bandied around. It's sort of quality depth pieces more than anything else. You know, the fan base tends to get caught up in famous names. I mean, at this point, people have been pining for J.J. Redick as a shooter off the bench for 10 years now, and he's not that J.J. Redick anymore. I mean, it feels like he was at Duke 30 years ago, but that's not the solution right now. The guy I like is the name probably that's out there the most, and it's Harrison Barnes. And I say that knowing that he's going to have one night where he puts up 4 points on 2 of 8 shooting and everybody's going to say, oh, he's the next Jeff Green. Great. And that'll probably be fair, but he's a guy who's a great locker room guy, really complete player. Good. Fine. Being the fourth option, can do a little bit of everything, not everything extremely well, but just a good solid NBA player in every regard. He's played in big games. He hasn't always played well in big games. He was part of the issue in those early championship Warrior teams with some struggles in the finals. But to me, he is probably the safest bet if the Kings actually do make him available. I think he'd be a really good fit in a lot of different ways. But the wow factor, if people are looking for that, he's not going to provide that. He's just going to provide one more solid veteran. And as Kemba is sort of a step down from Kyrie in terms of the talent ability, forget all the other stuff. He was like, he's like JV Kyrie kind of in a way. Harrison Barnes would kind of be like a slight step down from what Gordon Hayward gave them.
Yeah, it's a perfect comparison, but he does fail a lot of, it's so funny that when ultimately we keep resolving back to it, like they have a Gordon Hayward sized hole in this lineup right now. And that's part of what's conspiring against them. Let's spin it to I do want to make one clarification on that, because I find myself, we say like they should go just use this $28.5 million traded player exception. The Celtics are hard capped after signing Tristan Thompson, and they also don't want to go into the luxury tax this year because, as Wick Grosbeck mentioned, no fans in the stands, like you're not definitively a contender. So you have to straddle this balance here. And I think what the Celtics are doing is just trying to stay under that tax. It gives them a little bit more freedom in the future. So you probably only can spend, without sending out salary, probably somewhere in the $16 million range, which limits the pool of players you can go get. Harrison Barnes makes $22 million. So you'd either have to send out a Daniel Tice or, you know, enough salary to bring back that player. And then even there's going to be gymnastics. I don't think it's prohibitive. I think they could still do that for the right player. And I think that's essentially what Danny is just setting it up for, where, you know, if they make a lesser splash, it's like still someone that might be able to help the team, but they have eyes on a bigger move this offseason. I kick back that it's a little bit complicated. Jason Tatum's extension is about to kick in. You know, any player you take in a sign and trade, which might have to be the route they'd go, hard caps them again. So they couldn't necessarily, again, spend all that money. So just a very prickly thing. Would you have liked Danny to have found more for Gordon Hayward in the moment? Everyone sort of reversed back to Indiana and whether that was feasible. You know, did he make a misstep there? And should he have tried harder to get immediate talent rather than settling for, you know, once Gordon found a different destination, taking that traded player exception?
Yeah, that was a really interesting situation, because that kind of comes into the name recognition thing. And at first, my colleague Gary Washburn reported on what Danny was asking for. I think it came from the Indiana side of things. And I give Danny all the credit in the world for asking for TJ Warren and Turner, whatever it was. But you talk about the sort of name recognition, people were saying, we'll get Oladipo back. Oladipo would be a terrible fit here. They would have been happy to give that contract away. And eventually they did trade him. So sometimes it's not always going to be that most well-known guy. I liked Miles Turner. I understood why there was some skepticism there. I think they thought he might be a little bit redundant and blocking Time Lord's development. And one of the really satisfying things of the season is watching Time Lord take advantage of the opportunity mm-hmm. in the third year of his career and really take that step forward you're hoping to see. I'm not sure he would be sharing the court with Miles Turner too much. I also think the trade rumors seem to have lit a fire under Miles Turner. He's a better player right now than he was last season for sure. And Doug McDermott, a shooter off the bench, I guess, but he wouldn't be getting a lot of minutes for this team and he wouldn't be getting a lot of shots. He might be the guy out there when you're down three at the with 35 seconds left, but probably not much more beyond that because of his lack of defensive ability. So I thought that was a pretty interesting offer, but I also trust Danny and deciding not to pull the trigger there. And we've still got that wild variable with that trade exception to see what he ultimately does come back with. And if it's, signing Thompson and bringing in Teague as the veteran free agents, it's been more missed than hit there, but that wild card is still out there in terms of filling that void with a competent NBA player. It's going to drive people crazy if they do roll this over to next year, but I also kind of admire the possibility of that because Danny has proven time and again, the noise doesn't get to him.
Right.
He's not going to listen to what they're saying from 2 to 6 on one sports radio station or another. He's going to do what he believes is the right thing to do for the Celtics.
Yeah. And just like you said, it's easy to look now and say, wow, Miles Turner is playing a really good season, but in a vacuum, the Celtics had played with him in FIBA, the core. And I think they were more intrigued by Tristan Thompson and his veteran experience. And I understand why they move. And, I heard whispers that if TJ Warren was included in that deal, he wasn't staying in Boston, which I know would have angered a lot of Celtics fans because they wanted that sort of microwave scorer. And maybe that's kind of what they need now as we see their bench. But I think Danny has had designs on getting a 4-5 kind of guy. And I think that's still what he wants with that traded player exception. I think he just understands that that's probably fits with the Jays better and that you can get away with the hodgepodge of centers they have if they ever play Time Lord more than 20 minutes, which is my only critique of Brad Stevens.
What do you think of Thaddeus Young?
So I don't hate it. I think it's the perfect low budget move, but I think that I think Chicago is starting to climb up in the standings behind the Celtics. they might be ahead of them at this point based on a return.
So many 500 teams right now.
And so that's the other big complication here for Danny is that there's just not going to be a lot of sellers. And so, okay, Pelicans might be one because they're just probably looking into the future. The Kings maybe will come around, but again, it gets cumbersome adding a big salary like Harrison Barnes. You start looking around, there's just not a lot of teams. I mean, the Wizards are on a hot streak now. They don't want to make moves. So that's why I understand why they might be starting to put up that, hey, the summer might be better because there's just going to be more chances and more opportunity to add an impact talent than necessarily right now. But the position they put themselves in, I think Danny's backed himself into a little bit of a corner. He has to do something to improve this team. But, I still feel a little bit more positive about this team after our chat here. I will say, I want to end on a positive note. For those of you who don't know, me and Chad used to be cube mates. And this feels like another lifetime ago, but back my first job, my first like real job, I'll say, after graduating from Northeastern was I went back to cover high school sports for Boston.com and the Boston Globe. And Chad came in. What year did you start?
I got there 03 on the desk, but I didn't move over to Boston.com until 2009.
Okay. So right near the end of my tenure, and we had just gotten moved our pod, but you and me were looking at each other most days. I was joking before when we were setting this up that we built 162 Red Sox game day galleries. Our biggest traffic driver every day was people wanted to see pictures from the night before of the Red Sox, which is a fascinating thing to say right now based on the interest level of teams. I wanted to surprise you by bringing our old boss, Dave Leiford, on, but he is a very busy man. But I miss those days, just the simpler times, touching all the bases and everything that was going on. What do you miss most about Boston.com?
Yeah, that was a crazy time. But one of my main beat beyond being an online columnist at Globe Boston.com is covering sports media. And when I came over there, that was just an insane time. And NBC Sports Boston had just hired so much on-air talent, relaunched its website, hired a bunch of people like you from in the market not long after. WEI launched a website and stopped talking about it like a punchline. The Sports Hub just launched as a station. Everything was kind of blowing up around here in terms of opportunity. And I got moved over because I was the guy who had an independent blog, so I must understand how to use the internet. Because I was a copy editor, layout person on the Globe side, helping put the sports section together every night. And the Red Sox won the World Series in 04, and I didn't have an outlet to write about it, and it drove me crazy. So I just stay up at night with my infant daughter and write about the Red Sox on the little Blogspot blog. And because I did that, they said, oh, he knows how the internet works, and moved me over with you guys in 09. So very lucky break for me there, but it was just it was a great time to work there because, you know, we had a great staff. We had Steve Silva doing his dirt dog stuff and Gary Zen, he was covering the Celtics. I remember you guys going out to LA. It was just everybody's kind of figuring their way about what sports journalism on the internet was going to be, other than Bill Simmons. He had it all figured out for that point. The rest of us didn't. It was a great time to work there.
Oh, it was amazing. And I like you said, it was a confluence of, like, it was almost like the boom, right? Like, I know just all the championships and the Patriots obviously had started, we had three titles at that point, but you know, it felt like we were doing special sections every week for a new parade. And I don't miss the photo galleries, but I do miss the little camaraderie of our group trying to carve out the niche. I remember trying to get everyone to blog. You know, writers weren't used at that point to blogging every day, and we're trying to fill up the Bruins blog and the Celtics blog. And now it's so funny to me that it's like second nature. And well, shout out Mike Reese, laid the foundation for what has become of how we cover teams and how the sort of hyper locality of it. And those were the days.
It was a nightmare trying to get people to blog, like the guys who were writing for the Daily Paper. I remember I won't name the name, but there was a Red Sox beat writer who you'd call up and he would say, I've got 30 seconds, what do you need? And he's a nice guy, but he just didn't see the value of blogging what was going to be in the paper the next day on the internet. And now, of course, you know, everything is immediate. And a lot of ways I like it better this way. I think the old time beat guys, and I count in that regard too, kind of miss breaking a story and then going to see if the other paper has the same thing the next morning. But you know, you break something now, everybody's got it 30 seconds later and putting their own spin on it. But it was really cool to kind of be there working with you and so many other great guys at the advent of this whole crazy thing everywhere.
My favorite part was that we needed Bruins blog content, so I just started blogging about every fight that happened because I knew nothing else about hockey, but I could write about two guys punching each other. And now I think there's like a whole website that does just hockey fights. And so, you know, hey, look, it's good to see how far we've come. But I'm proud of you mostly now in Superstar. I love every time you write. Like I said, I'm glad you're bringing some positivity. I think it's easy to go the sort of doom and gloom route, and I'm probably just as guilty of it because I get a little emotional after watching these drudgery. But I hope we brought some positivity to this podcast, and let's hope that we have more encouraging things to talk about moving forward. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, thank you so much.
If they lose the next four, I'll come on and rip them. We'll do that. Good talking to you, pal.
All right. Take care, Chad. All right. Good stuff from Chad Finn. I love that he stays level. You know, where a lot of us are panicking. I'm guilty of it after games as well. But Chad's hanging in there, hoping that they can figure out what ails them. A lot of stuff that's ailing them right now. And get the season turned around. Let's turn to the other bright spot on this Celtics team. Robert Williams flying around, a lot of alley-oops going down, big blocks, including against Zion. He has been one of the most encouraging aspects of this team and where they are headed. I got a chance to catch up with him this week. Here's our one-on-one, all about dunking off trampolines, what it's like in the air. Here's my sit-down with Robert Williams. All right, here with Celtics big man Rob Williams. Rob, I want to start with this. I was reading an old article about how you learn to dunk, and I heard you set up a trampoline outside your house and was like dunking through trees. Is that right? Like, what was it like back in the day?
I couldn't. My goal was always at the highest level. My pops wouldn't let me let the goal down, and I couldn't dunk. But I had a trampoline, so I used to kind of scoot them together, you know, jump off the trampoline, head over the goal, you know, dunking the ball.
Now you don't need a trampoline. Do you remember the first time you dunked on somebody, like, or dunked in a practice? Like, what was that first time you were like, whoa, I can do this without a trampoline?
It was exciting my first time dunking on somebody. Obviously, it was weird to know that I didn't need the trampoline anymore, you know.
Did you see Shemmy's reaction the other night? That first quarter lob from Jalen, you dunked it. Shemmy was walking away with like his head in his hands. Do you ever surprise yourself with how high up you get with some of these things?
I just say, nah, not really, because you don't realize, you know, what you did until like you go see the play, like watch it in the moment, you don't really realize. So obviously I see the bench going crazy. I'm like, yeah, I did some spectacular.
What goes through your mind when you're in the air?
It's just really aggression. I gotta finish this. It's just aggression, man. All aggression.
So Brad said he's been trying to keep your minutes low with the idea that by the end of the season they'll be able to maximize your playing time. I guess two things. Like, one, how are you feeling? I mean, we hear Jason say coming out of COVID, you know, he's felt some. Have you felt any impact like that? And how's your hip? Like, are you okay with them sort of ramping you up slowly here?
Yeah, for sure. My hip has been good, responding well to treatment. And as far as the COVID situation, you know, it was still a hassle just getting back in shape. But I feel like, you know, the more games you play, the better condition you get in, the better you feel.
Tell me about earning Brad's trust here, and your minutes have gone up. Like, what does it come down to? It seems like you're just playing with energy and letting your kind of natural talents take over.
Yeah, it's just knowing the system, knowing what he's looking for. And, like you said, earning his trust. When you earn his trust, you know, he believes in you a lot. So I feel like I've been taking a big step towards that.
How much do you guys miss Marcus Smart on the defensive end?
Series, man, miss him. Not just the defensive end, miss him all around. You know what I'm saying? We can't wait to get him back. He's a great partner for our team.
How do you stay positive when you're going through rough patches like this and trying to find that consistency?
You playing every other night, bro. So you just gotta know you can't dwell on games. You have no time to dwell on games at all.
What's it like being a dad now? How old is your daughter, Ava? Right? How old is she now?
Yeah, she's two years old. Yeah, 2 years old. Yeah.
What's that like? How do you balance dad and basketball?
I just try to get as many FaceTime calls in as I can a day. You know, her thing now is dinosaurs. You know, whatever she catch on to, like, little trends that she likes. So now it's dinosaurs. I'm trying to find stuffed dinosaur animals, you know, in the center and stuff like that. But the FaceTime calls mean the most. You know, that's the closest that I can be during the season. So.
I was reading an old interview. You said Jumanji was your favorite movie. Was that was that your favorite flick back in the day or something?
Yeah, it was when I was younger. It was when I was younger, for sure, for sure.
And now, so you had that favorite clip. They asked you what your favorite holiday movie was, and you said any Michael Myers movie. Are you a big scary movie fan?
Yeah, I love horror movies. I love horror movies. My favorite holiday is Halloween. By far.
All right, a couple more. I saw you said that you got hooked on bowling while you were in Las Vegas at one point. Are you still bowling a lot? Maybe not now during the pandemic, but like, did you catch that bug?
I kind of stopped just because I ran into a couple of friends that were actually good, and I found out I wasn't as good as I thought I was, so I put it to rest.
Don't go bowling with Marcus Smart.
He's one of them. He's one of them.
All right. So last thing, have you ever tried volleyball? Like, all your skill sets suggest that you should be awesome at volleyball. Have you ever gone out there and tried to like dominate on that court?
Yeah, I used to try, but everybody I played against said I was cheating. They said I was like throwing the ball, like catching and throwing it back or whatever. So I just stopped.
That's what the haters say when you're too good at the sport. All right, Rob Williams, thank you so much for your time.
No problem. Appreciate it.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's episode. I want everybody to go like and subscribe. I need some favors right now. I want to hear from you guys because I know you've got things to say about this team. So you got two options. You can go to the Apple Pod page, leave a review. You can add a question in there. I'll comb through this week, take a look. And if you leave a good message, maybe I can get it on the program. Same deal. Check out our YouTube page. I know you guys are active in the comments. You're venting down there. Go ahead and leave us a message. We'll tackle some of that on the next Celtics Talk podcast. Like, subscribe, do all that. We'll catch you next time on the Celtics Talk podcast.